The New South Wales government has recently introduced some laws to limit the kinds of info that renters are being asked to give out during the application process. As it stands at the moment, what kinds of data are renters currently legally required to hand over? And what have you and the union found are the kinds of things they're also being asked for in practice?
This is an area of renting that's really not been regulated at all for a very long time. People have been asked for a range of information, and there's really not been a set of rules or restrictions on what information can be sought outside of a pretty limited range around trying to prevent discrimination. It was very difficult to actually ensure that the rules were being followed because the application process itself is so untransparent that you really never knew, was I being discriminated against for some unlawful reason? Or was I missing out because I didn't have as much income as another applicant, or I didn't have the same, permanency in my job, or whatever it might have been? And so this was an area that was really difficult to see whether it was operating fairly, but it was pretty obvious that there were some issues coming through. And particularly in the last few years, we'd seen a rise in the amount of information being sought by people that was kind of driven by the absence of regulation and the growth of technology. So, as more information and more data became available about people, we saw that starting to make its way into the application process. So, the really obvious example of this was people were starting to be asked for their social media handles so that people could, agents and landlords could go and look at your social media profile and see both what kind of person you were and if they felt like you were suitable to live in that property, but also to check if the kind of information you were saying about yourself matched up with what you were saying. So, whether there was a sort of a verification going on. But we all know that social media is not necessarily actually representative of who you are. We had an example, for instance, of someone who was declined from a property, and they were actually told this because the agent believed that they had a pet because on their Instagram they were carrying a cat in their arms. But it wasn't their cat. It was just a cute cat they happened to pick up and someone took a nice picture of them. So, this kind of information wasn't actually useful in determining whether an application should or shouldn't go ahead, but there wasn't really a way to know what was fair and reasonable. There wasn't a system to say that. And that's essentially what's being put in place now is a system that at least is transparent about the way that decisions are being made, about the information that can be collected, even if it doesn't necessarily ensure that that decision is being made fairly. There's no change in the actual decision-making process yet. It's just about what information can be gathered about you.
You've been involved in tenant advocacy for well over a decade. In that time, what kind of changes have you personally seen in terms of the kinds of information that people are being asked to hand over for applications?
We've certainly seen a shift over the 10 or 15 years that I've been working here that really matches up, I suppose, with the growth of property technology as well. That the amount of information that you could be asked to provide or that could be kind of captured about you in other ways grew and grew, and it became sort of more normal for different things to become part of the process. The key parts are really the amount of information and the amount of detail about your finances. So people didn't used to be asked for instance, the account statements themselves with line by line items of your expenditure. Some people occasionally were, but it wasn't normal within the industry. It used to be that you'd provide some payslips, some indication of your income, and that was enough. But as it became easier to access because your bank account was online, because the information was easy to access, it became part of the process. And similar things like that. We also saw a growth, I think, in the amount of references or the type of references. So it didn't used to be that you'd be asked for your boss to give a reference. But as online forms, as the application process moved into these sort of third-party platforms, it became easier to ask for references from a wider range of people, and that started happening. So even I, as the CEO of the Tenants Union of New South Wales, have to give references for my staff to find a new home, which is, an odd exercise sometimes. I'm not going to give a bad reference. So that we saw that range of references expanding, and then, as I said, I think gathering information about people rather than information provided by the tenant is another big change that started happening. And so the obvious one there is social media, but I think we've also seen more information being spread between agents in the industry. We saw after the 2010 version of the Tenancy Act came in that started to regulate tenant databases or blacklists. We saw the way that they were operating change in a couple of ways, one of which was this notification system that goes that some agents pay a subscription for, where they will let other agents know that you're applying for properties with them and sort of invite them to get in touch and talk about you. But we also saw the databases starting to push for tenants to pay for their own kind of reference and background checks and supply that as part of the application. So that was something that was directly in response to they weren't allowed to charge tenants for access anymore. So they instead they repackaged it and said, oh, well, this is now you improving your own application. No one's requiring you to do this, but the implication was that it would help you with your application. I think with little evidence, but a lot of money changed hands around that.
Once they've actually given that data over, what kind of obligations do landlords and estate agents have to actually safeguard that data during and after their tenancy?
Some agencies, particularly, are captured by the Australian Privacy Principles, and that determines for companies that are have a revenue over $3 million, a set of responsibilities around holding on to someone else's data. But a lot of agencies don't meet the $3 million threshold, and most self-managing landlords certainly don't. So there's a lot of people in the industry who aren't covered by those privacy principles. What they are then covered by is their own professional insurances that do have a role to play in guiding them around how to use information. But even both of those structures don't necessarily restrict their ability to keep your data. And as soon as somebody is keeping data about you, there's at least a risk that that data will get out, even without any malicious intent from them, but because some other party has broken in. And we've seen some really high-profile examples of real estate agencies being caught up in data breaches, information about tenants and other kind of customers of the agency, details being leaked.
If, say, these reforms do end up passing, what kind of real human impact do you think they're going to have on renters looking for a home?
The process of finding a home will still be tough while we don't have the right kinds of homes at the right prices in the areas that people want to live. It'll still be tough because it is still based on a competitive system where you and all the other renters who are seeking to apply for a place are being pitched against each other. But these reforms limit the amount of information that's being gathered about you in a way that hopefully levels that playing field and reduces the sense of a kind of arms race of providing more and more and more information, and hopefully sets a bit of a precedent for, well, we've now set these rules about the kind of information. The system worked okay. Now we can move on to thinking about other parts of the application process that also need some attention, that have never been regulated, that aren't operating, in a fair way. So it's a first step into this world of looking at the application process and how it could run and should run. I think that it also means that your information, your data, is not as much at risk as it currently is. And we, like I said, we have seen some pretty high profile data breaches where potentially thousands, tens of thousands of renters' information was leaked. The less information that's being held, that's less of a risk. And that does have pretty direct potential benefits, particularly if information like your payments, your cards and so on are no longer at risk. And so this legislation is a first step. It's possible that Parliament might make some amendments to the bill to include some more information, but even if they don't, it at least sets a precedent for future work. And I think that's where we're at with this legislation at the moment, is this really is the first stage, and it's the first time we have set some of these rules. So I think it's something that we'll look to develop and progress going forward.